And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, as you know, the appropriate commission in Pennsylvania published the first reapportionment maps of what will undoubtedly be a series of reapportionment maps, redrawing the state legislative districts as a result of the new census. Have you had a chance to look at that map?
Well, I've looked at them.
Do you make any sense out of them? Can you figure out what it means?
Well, it's difficult. The Senate map, because there's only 50 senators, is a lot easier to discern from the House map, which has over 200 different districts. But if we only concentrate on northeastern Pennsylvania, they're interesting. The first interesting part was that on the Senate map, that the commission, which has two Republicans, two Democrats, and a supposed neutral, all five agreed on the Senate map. The House map, which also has the five members, split 3-2. The Democrats were in favor of it, the Republicans weren't. So this presents two different dynamics that are at play. And it goes to the governor. If the governor approves it, there'll be a lawsuit either way. But if he approves it, it more or less goes into effect. The Senate map is for northeastern Pennsylvania is kind of sort of reconstructs one Senate district that looks a lot like the old 17th congressional district. It surrounds Lackawanna County and then takes a piece of the northern part of Lackawanna County and puts it there. The House map does something entirely different. The Senate map, which gained support of both of two of the three local state senators, really makes it easier for those two to get reelected, because one heavily favors Republican district, and that would be Lisa Baker from Luzerne County, and she would get the surrounding counties of which are heavily Republican, and Marty Flynn, who's from Lackawanna County, he loses part of Lackawanna, but he gets a heavily Democratic section of Luzerne County. And the loser in this, and I think the reason they did it, was State Senator John Udicek, who essentially gets his district moved south and out of the area and leaves him in a decision whether he's going to try to run against Senator Baker. His problem is that he was a Democrat for most of his time, and then he left the Democratic Party and became an independent. So he's alienated the Democrats. And the fact is, he doesn't have any Republican bona fides. Lisa Baker does. So if he gets into an election fight with her, he's likely to lose. He's not going to get the Republican votes in Wayne and Susquehanna and Pike counties.
Does the world come to an end if the state legislature loses John Udicek?
No. 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 And there's been rumors that he's been wanting out of the state legislature for a number of years. That
he was looking to become a college president, wasn't he?
Right, right. Wilkes, and now they thought that he has his eyes on Luzerne Community College as well, but he didn't have the qualifications for Wilkes, the educational qualifications. Luzerne College is much more of a political position. So we'll see what happens.
I have no way of judging this myself. I don't know about how to do that. But I read that the net effect of this particular map is that the House could become controlled by the Democrats. There's enough. These districts are competitive enough so that the Democrats could pick up it's conceivable that the Democrats could pick up enough votes so that they would control the House. They would have the majority of the House. But the Senate will remain Republican. Now, if that's the net effect, that kind of is very significant in terms of state politics, right? Because that prevents the Republicans from enacting a whole series of constitutional amendments, which they're talking about enacting right now, to cut off voting altogether, or to severely restrict voting altogether.
It's not just voting. Remember, last time they were able to push through a constitutional amendment that restricted the power of the governor.
Right.
Because the Republican Party right now doesn't see a lot of opportunity to control the governor's mansion in Harrisburg. Now, you know, every time there's an election, you never know what can happen. But they're trying to mimic what other legislators, late jurors, such as North Carolina and Wisconsin, did when Democrats won the governorship, and that is take away power from the governor and put it in the legislature. Remember, if the way they work constitutional amendments is the governor can't veto that kind of a bill. What it is they put together a proposed amendment with certain wording, and they have to pass it both in the House and the Senate in two consecutive terms of the legislature, and then it goes on the ballot. And they always try to time it for a ballot in an off-year election when the turnout is low, which favors Republicans, or in a primary when the turnout is low, which also tends to favor Republicans for a statewide question. And so the governor has no way of vetoing this. And if the Democrats control one of the state houses, the Republican power to do this is stymied. Now, of course, what happens is the legislature then becomes pretty well deadlocked.
Harrisburg becomes like Washington, D.C. is now.
Right. But they still have things that they have to do. They're going to have to be compromised to be made. You know, you have to have a state budget, whether you like it or not. But a lot of the mischief isn't going to happen. But a lot of reforms aren't going to happen either.
But at this moment, there's no potential for reforms happening anyway.
Right. The other thing is that the rural districts could lose clout because they're heavily Republican, and if the Republicans control the state house, it helps them. And we've seen some of the ramifications of this in terms of the transportation issues in the state, where the districts have been taking money from the Pennsylvania Turnpike and using it to subsidize small towns and townships who don't have police coverage to pay the state police. It's not supposed to be that way, but so we'll see. And things aren't final yet. You know, it's really interesting the way that the state house, and they did this in several different areas, is they carved up the city of Scranton, which currently has two state representatives, and they carved it in four ways. So now there's four different representatives have parts of Scranton. Now, in places in the South, this is the way they used to do it to dilute minority votes. If there was a city that had a lot of minorities, what they do is they carve up the minority districts into multiple districts so that only a little bit of those minorities were in each. But in Scranton, this works the opposite way. This strengthens the Democrats because it makes those districts more Democratic. It doesn't dilute their, it actually expands their power. So we'll have to see what happens. It's still going to be court challenges, and we still don't have the big one, which is the congressional map. Whether the template of the Senate or the template of the House is more likely to happen on a congressional map, we don't know.
The political issue here, the overriding political issue, is whether the authoritarian drive to dominate politics and to institutionalize authoritarian control of the political system, whether that is going to continue unabated, or whether there's some way to prevent it from continuing and even reversing it, or stopping it first and reversing it.
Right.
In North Carolina, in Ohio, Wisconsin and Michigan, the Republicans are on a rampage with partisan gerrymandering, which they can get away with. You can't. The courts are you can't go into court and sue on these matters. The Republican Supreme Court has already said this is not something federal courts are allowed to adjudicate. This is all political.
Yeah.
It's a political struggle. That's what's involved on a national basis, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in some places like North Carolina, there are questions whether under the state laws or state constitution this kind of gerrymandering is legal. I know the North Carolina courts have stepped in and said, whoa, and we're going to postpone the primaries for 2 months till we work this thing out. It could then possibly go to the United States Supreme Court where the Democrats
lose. If it does go to the court, they lose. The Democrats lose.
Yeah, John Roberts is, you know, one of those people who's lived for, you know, taking away voting rights from the Democrats. He's bought into that thing. So,
yeah, they don't lose 5-4, they lose 6-3.
They lose 6-3.
But they lose. So that's not a potential solution. The courts are not a solution. The right wing has captured the courts. They started out with this strategy at the end of the 1960s. They said this is a long-term goal, and now they've succeeded. They had.
Yeah.
The courts the courts had been a resort for liberals ever since the Brown versus Board of Education. The right wing said, we're not going to allow that anymore. It took them a long time, but they succeeded.
Yeah, well, I you know, I mentioned a long time ago in one of our shows, I had done research into things because I was supposed to give a talk to the Democratic women in the spring of 2020. And, of course, that went by the wayside. But, you know, there have been 19 since 1969, since Richard Nixon took over, there have been 19 Republican nominations to the Supreme Court and only 4 Democratic. I pointed out that the last time a Democrat appointed a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was 1946, was Harry Truman, 75 years. So, that's where the courts were. And the courts were very important. Donald Trump used this Federalist Society, which formed in the late 70s, funded a lot by the Koch brothers and those fellows, and particularly the 80s, and turned that Federalist Society into a big, ideological machine to control the judges, both not only on the Supreme Court, but on the intermediate appellate courts, and to push through their agenda and to formulate cases that were just designed to get the court's approval. So,
and by the way, you can see how successful it's been. Yeah. The Biden administration's foreign policy is stymied by a Texas right-wing judge. The policy on health care stymied by another right-wing judge. The policy on expanding voting rights stymied by another right-wing judge. So the power of the legislature and even of the executive branch is nullified by the fact that the right wing now controls the judiciary, and the judiciary asserts the prerogative of declaring laws passed by the legislature illegal, and they are then illegal. So even if you have voting rights, even if you win the election, the institutional nature of the court system is such that they can stymie the elected legislature by saying whatever they do is illegal.
By the way, though, it hasn't gone well noticed, but Joe Biden is actually getting federal judges appointed at a faster clip than anybody has ever done. He got a couple more this week. There was an interesting thing, though. Susan Collins, the so-called moderate, I always said a moderate of convenience, has voted against most of these judges. She voted against the first woman of color for the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals this week. And she's voted against virtually every person of color that Joe Biden has put up for the courts.
Has she voted for any, no matter what the color is, that Joe Biden has put up?
She may have voted one or two. The article that I saw or skimmed through didn't say that, but it emphasized all the ones that she's opposed. They said she supported Trump judges who were blatantly unqualified, people who were in their 30s and never tried a case, but she refused a woman who had great experience and is rated highly qualified by the ABA, that kind of thing. So the problem is that Biden might be getting a lot of these judges, but there are already a lot of Trump judges in.
Trump appointees now make up a quarter of all the judges in the country. And if you look at the higher judges, the appellate court judges, more than a quarter.
So, right.
I mean, the right wing and they're placed in places where they can really do a lot of harm and do a lot of harm. Not that
right.
They could do. They do.
You just, and a lot of times for the district court, it's going to depend on just which judge you draw. And on the appeals court, it's who's on the panel. Believe me, I had Judge Alito on the panel for the Third Circuit once, and I knew I didn't have a chance. So, you have to see how that works out. By the way, the federal judges, though, somewhat uniformly have been very harsh or much harsher in their sentencing of insurrectionists than the Justice Department has even asked for. This week, one judge sent a guy away for over 5 years. He's the one that threw a fire extinguisher at one of the Capitol police. And it's interesting to see these people begging and groveling before the court. And the judges aren't buying it. The lesser people aren't getting huge things, but like Frank Scavo he wanted probation. He got 60 days. There's another local person up for sentencing this coming week, and we'll see what they get.
So far, who's not going to get anything is Donald Trump, member of the Trump family, Steve Bannon, none of the people who organized it. None of the godfathers, and they're not going to get it. It's the underlings. It's the button men who are getting it.
Well, that was the issue, because in this person's groveling, he said I was, misled by these people. I was encouraged by these people, and the judge essentially said, yeah, none of these people have been sentenced, or many of them haven't been charged yet. But fact is, you're still responsible for your own actions. You decided to go to Washington. You decided to march to the Capitol. You decided to go inside. You decided to throw things. So none of this whataboutism here. You get pulled over for drunk driving. You can't say, well, there's dozens of people on the road, tonight driving drunk. Why are you going after me? That don't work. And the judges have been doing that. And by the way, we seem to be getting closer this week to just who was behind the insurrection and the sedition on January 6th. The committee came out when they decided to charge Mark Meadows with contempt of Congress and started releasing things. They hit pretty hard. Liz Cheney came out and read from Fox News, so-called opinionist text to the White House, to Mark Meadows, about stopping this. And then Adam Schiff came out and he started reading congressional requests to break this stuff up. Quickly, Jim Jordan tried to get ahead of the issue by saying, yeah, well, one of those came from me, rather than having it leak out as to who it was. But there could be a lot more there. We don't know. Certainly Fox has had a bad week. This undercuts their claim that this was an Antifa operation and that they knew it wasn't an Antifa operation. But they kept putting out this false narrative. And of course, then Fox had another judge, and I think it was a Trump judge, told Fox that they couldn't get out of the lawsuit by Dominion, the over $1 billion lawsuit. And that's going to be interesting because that opens them up to having to go through discovery and get internal texts and emails and documents and policy papers and whatever, and eventually depositions of of the people at Fox, not just the on-air personalities, but behind-the-scene personalities.
All of that's interesting, but and let's assume that Fox loses, they got to come up with a lot of money. The real issue is, how does authoritarianism, which is on the march, get stopped? I mean, we know, everybody knows, that the authoritarian movement is taking over the election process for the purpose of perverting it.
Yeah.
Right? The more they yell that the elections are rigged, the more you know what they're saying is, we want to rig them.
That's it. You know, it's my wife says it's projection.
It's projection, exactly. Now,
this
the question
is
how does that get stopped? So far, nothing is stopping them. Nothing. The Democrats are not stopping them. The Democrats are not even paying attention to it. Democratic-minded columnists are calling attention to it, but the organization as a political body is not paying attention to it. They're certainly not stopping everything in Congress to try to pass federal legislation to prevent this kind of activity in the states, which is going on unopposed. I don't see any rallies being organized, marches, demonstrations. If you think that the key to American life is the maintenance of its democratic system, you ought to be doing something that's extreme. I don't see that they're doing anything that's even moderate.
Well, that may have shifted a little bit this week. Whether intentionally or unintentionally, Joe Manchin's obstinance may have shifted the field. By the way, there was a great political cartoon in the Scranton Times this weekend about Joe Manchin getting a stocking full of coal from Santa and being very grateful and thankful for it. You know, at the end of the week, the Democrats came out and said, okay, you know, Manchin's blocking us from Build Back Better. So we're going to concentrate on the election issues. And they've held...
But he stopped them on that, too.
Well,
he stopped them on the John Lewis bill, which, by the way, is not the strongest bill in the world, because he said he could get a better bill. So they said, okay, try it. And, of course, he couldn't get a better bill. He couldn't get one Republican to move along with him. So, this business about bipartisanship working across the aisle, Biden became president because he said he could do it. He can't even get the caucus to go with him. Can't get Sinema and Biden to go, and Manchin to go with him.
Well, but they're working around this. You know,
what
Sinema,
are they doing? What are they doing and how are they succeeding?
Well, they haven't succeeded yet, but what they decided to do is they at the end of the week, they called in two people, one a former Republican and one a former Democrat, who had been aides on Capitol Hill in the Senate for years and had an intimate knowledge of the workings and the rules of the Senate. Remember, this is the Senate that they've got to work on. And what it looks like, Sinema particularly came out and said, I don't want to do a carve-out for voting rights. But what they've apparently are working on is saying, okay, you don't have to do a carve-out, but you like the filibuster? Let's make it a true filibuster. What it's devolved into from the old days when Strom Thurmond stood up for, 30 hours or something like that, 27 hours, to block a civil rights bill in the 1950s. Instead now, nobody has to stand up and do it. They just say, I'm going to filibuster, and everybody says, we're not even going to try. What they might be able to do is change the rules and say, if you want to have a filibuster, you've got to actually filibuster. You know, Mitch McConnell, you want to filibuster
this? Why can't they do that now with the rules that they already have?
Well, I'm not sure that they can't, and that's what they're talking about. And make these folks stand up and filibuster until they can't talk anymore. And once they have to break, that person loses their rights to be on the floor. Now, someone else wants to pick it up, that's fine. But if the Republicans want to go one after another, after another, after another on voting rights, you might not see that many. Let's see Ted Cruz. Let's see Josh Hawley. Let's see Tom Cotton get up there.
Cruz did it, right? Didn't he? He spoke longer than the guy from South Carolina did.
Well, I don't think it was that large. You know, he quoted Dr. Seuss.
He quoted Dr. Seuss. He read recipes. Yeah. He did whatever you do.
But the thing is, at some point, they all have to stop because they have to take breaks and what have you. And then the filibuster is complete, and then they can vote. So
when that happens,
they only need 50.
They need 50.
Because, so that's where it's at.
So but then Manchin and Sinema's votes count.
Yeah. Then they
haven't overcome that problem.
Well, but what they haven't said that they're opposed to voting rights. They've said we're opposed to the filibuster being changed.
Yeah, but guess what?
Then we'll see. Then we'll find out.
Then you'll find out. Then what? Then what?
Then you'll find out.
I mean, in the Build Back Better bill, which Manchin says, you know, he's against it because of budgetary issues, it turns out that he single-handedly stripped out almost all of the provisions of the bill that attack the climate crisis and try to bring some sanity to climate policy. He took them all out single-handedly. Now, nobody got any publicity. He didn't get any publicity about that. And he doesn't make the point that he's against the policy. He makes the point it costs too much. But it turns out that whether or not it costs too much, he wants fossil fuels to continue to be extracted from the ground. And he's going to do everything that he can to make sure that that continues. Yeah, that makes him an enemy of humanity.
Well, he wants coal in his stocking for Christmas.
He wants coal in his stocking for Christmas. Meanwhile, he threatens all of existing life as it is currently lived, and as it has been lived for about the last, I don't know, 800,000 years.
Which is why, in November, it's important for the Democrats not only to hold control of the House, but to get up to at least 52 or 53 votes.
And that, you think to yourself, taking a look at Pennsylvania, what is the Pennsylvania Democratic state leadership doing to guarantee the mobilization of enough votes so that whoever they nominate gets elected? It doesn't strike me. Looking at it from the Democratic committee in my county, I want to tell you, they're not there.
Well, you know, we're going to have to see. You know, the Democrats are, what they want to do is gin up the vote in the big areas.
How about ginning up the vote?
Yeah. You and I disagree. This week we saw something interesting, though, among the Republicans, because they're going to have the more interesting primary. Democrats are having an interesting primary, but the Republicans, with Dr. Oz in this, Mehmet Oz, a group was formed, a shadowy dark money group called the American Leadership Action. And they were formed to support Dr. Oz.
It's the Heritage Foundation. That's who that is.
Yeah, it's the Koch brothers and whatever. And to attack more what they see as his primary opponent, a guy named Dave McCormick, who hasn't even announced yet, who's a hedge fund guy from Connecticut, as opposed to being a doctor from New Jersey. So we'll see how, you know, it's interesting, though, how some of the heavyweights in the Republican Party have gotten behind Oz. We mentioned Dave Urban last week. We'll see, but it's no easy thing because it came out this week that Dr. Oz at one point was pro-choice with regard to abortions. That was one issue, and there's a couple of other issues that he's going to have to speak to in a Republican primary that may not go over well in places like Susquehanna County.
Well, we'll see what happens in Susquehanna County and Dr. Oz, but this guy McCormick is no... He's hardly an acceptable substitute.
No, yeah. I think he'd be a formidable opponent because he looks like a lot of what Pennsylvania senators look like. You know, the button-down businessman, the people who have succeeded, Pat Toomey, Tom Ridge, those kind of people who've gotten elected statewide, who they look more like Glenn Youngkin, you know. They don't look as radical as they are.
Well, so, we've got a lot coming up. It comes up in disguise. The authoritarians so far are on the march. And it's not clear to me that there's a effective barrier. Forget beating them. I'd like to just halt them.
Yeah, well, we need to go farther than that. But... we'll see what happens this week. We have Christmas coming up. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
And, you know, Congress is going to recess. So, but you never know what could occur.
Well, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.